Well, listen, guys, Dave's on the run. The last time we left him here in 2 Samuel, his son has risen up. Got quite a gathering at this point. There's a revolt. Dave's throne is in jeopardy. He's gathered 600 Gentile misfits with him, loyal to him to the end. No doubt because of his love and loyalty to them. What you reap, you sow. And as David comes to the top of the Mount of Olives and he's weeping and he's absolutely rejected and can't believe this is happening, he cries out, worships God. Remember, we studied that last week. And the Lord interrupts his prayer with, as it turns out, the answer to his prayer, which was what, guys? Lord, would you please confuse the counsel of Ahithophel? You guys remember that? Let's be reminded who Ahithophel was really quickly, if you're just jumping in. Ahithophel is the wisest guy in the neighborhood. This man has expertise in strategy in the battlefield, counsel, advice. He was David's chief advisor. Godly man at one point. His wisdom and his advice was received by David without question. And you'll see that again tonight. But the thing with Ahithophel, where it all goes south as far as his relationship with David, is this, guys. Ahithophel, remember, was the grandfather of Bathsheba. You mess with my granddaughter, David. You mess with my grandbaby, and it's on now. And so he turns his back on the king, doesn't receive the brokenness of David. That's tragic, isn't it? Doesn't see what God sees, refuses to see what God sees. All he can see is the tragedy. All he can see is the personal offense. My family, David, really? That's all he can see. And he turns his back on David, and he actually joins himself with this rebel punk kid, Absalom, and says, I'm going to advise him. And in his counsel, in his advice, you absolutely hear vengeance and bitterness. Sad, isn't it? Because this man, who apparently at one point was yielded to God, used by God, because of a trial that he went through, he allowed that trial to harden him and make him bitter, as opposed to soften him, make him compassionate. And it ends up being his undoing, tragically. So Hushai shows up, guys, the answer to David's prayer. The very one that would be used by God to confuse the counsel of Ahithophel. David sends him back to Jerusalem on a top secret undercover mission. You guys remember what it was, real quick, just so we know? He sends Hushai back to Jerusalem and says, would you please pretend to be loyal to Absalom, my son, get information, and send us word. Would you be willing to do that, Hushai? And he says, you got it. I'm on it. That's a tricky role, guys, and it takes great courage. His life is in his hands. He has to be an opportunist, right? He can't just blurt out instruction. He has to wait for the perfect time to speak because he can't be suspected, okay? So you'll see Hushai, which, by the way, was another advisor to David. He shines in this. Let's pick up in verse 15 of chapter 16. And Absalom and all the people and the men of Israel came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him. And it came to pass, when Hushai, the Archite, David's friend, was come unto Absalom, that Hushai said unto Absalom, God save the king. God save the king. So he starts off strong. He starts off very aggressive. As soon as he sees Absalom, no doubt pays him some type of bodily respect, bows down to him, he says, God save the king. Well, listen, Absalom knows that Hushai was one of David's friends, one of David's advisors. He knows that. So immediately, he suspects him, right? Hushai better have answers right now, or this could cost him his throat. So, here it is. And it came to pass, verse 17, and Absalom said to Hushai, is this thy kindness to thy friend? Why wentest thou not with thy friend? What Absalom is saying is this the loyalty you show to your friend David? I know you guys are friends. Why aren't you with him? What are you doing here? Puts him on the spot. Life or death question. Well, Hushai said to Absalom in verse 18, no, but whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel choose, him will I be, and with him will I abide. And again, whom should I serve? Should I not serve in the presence of his son as I have served in thy father's presence, so will I be in thy presence. Man, quick on his feet, Hushai is. He says, listen, I have no loyalty to a man. Be clear on this, young man. He pulls rank, speaks very passionately with conviction, convincing. Be clear on this, Absalom. My loyalty is to my country and to my God. And who God has chosen, there's some flattery mixed in with there, isn't there? Clearly you. Look at your hair, right? Right? Clearly you, right? So I am loyal to my God, and whoever God puts on that throne, I will serve him. And let my track record speak for itself. You're right, I was loyal to your dad. And you can expect that same loyalty for yourself. Well, Absalom hears this and he says, whoa. Well, all right then. You know, Absalom, from a worldly perspective, would be a fool to send this guy to the curb, assuming he was honest, assuming he's being truthful. Now, he wasn't. You win some, you lose some. But this is the deal, guys. Hushai, he's a con man. He's one of them righteous con men. He's the type of guy who uses his skills in the BC for the good. I don't know how you process that. But I guess we'll move on. But I've seen it. Verse 19 and again. Oh, excuse me, verse 20. Relax, Aaron. I want to gain some ground tonight, so I'm going to go fast. Verse 20, then said Absalom to Ahithophel, give counsel among you what we shall do. So, obviously Hushai is allowed to be a part of the team, but Absalom, right from his entrance of Jerusalem, he knows, all right, what's our first move? Then he goes to Ahithophel. Probably a smart move from a worldly perspective. Once again, here's the counsel of Ahithophel, the first bit of it. Ahithophel said to Absalom, go in unto thy father's concubines, which he has left to keep the house. And all Israel shall hear that thou art abhorred of thy father. Then shall the hands of all that are with thee be strong. So they spread Absalom a tent upon the top of the house. That's David's palace. And Absalom went in unto his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. Now that is some disturbing counsel, isn't it? And you understand what he's suggesting. You've got to make a move, Absalom. If you are serious about this rebellion, if you are serious about this revolt, you have got to make a move that convinces the people there is no loyalty left between you and your dad. There's a point of no return. You need to make a blatant, bold statement. I do not respect my father. And I am going to lead this country. And so his advice is, go into his harem. Now, why is that harem there? Again, if that harem wasn't there, wouldn't have been a foothold, was it? Again, this falls back on David to some degree. But that's the counsel, guys. And you've got to see that there is bitterness and vengeance in the heart of Ahithophel. Why does he want his son to experience the wives, plural, unfortunately, of David? Because he wants division to happen between son and father. That's what the enemy does, guys. You know that, right? Your enemy wants more than anything for there to be division between your heavenly father and you. And that's what sin does, by the way. That's why sin is so horrible and so lethal. Sin separates us from God. That's the problem with sin, right? It drives us from the presence of a God who loves us, wants to be with us. Well, Ahithophel, playing the part of Judas in this scene, the betrayer of the king, no doubt manipulated by the enemy, Satan himself, gives some pretty heinous counsel, and it's received and it's carried out. Verse 23, in the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was as if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. That is just to say, his counsel was highly respected in those days. Like God is speaking himself. Oh, that might be unhealthy, right? In fact, I would suggest that is unhealthy. But that's the reputation that this man had, speaking as if speaking the very word or oracles of God. Chapter 17, verse 1. Moreover, okay, to be continued, or as it continues, Ahithophel said unto Absalom, let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night. And I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will smite the king only. And I will bring back all the people unto thee. The man whom thou seekest is as if all return, so all the people shall be in peace. And the same pleased Absalom well, and all the elders of Israel. So here's counsel number two, guys. Ahithophel says, listen to me. We have got to make a move militarily, and we've got to do it tonight. We've got to spring on David while he's still in an emotional state. He's still absolutely shocked that this has happened. He's still processing, my son. He's out there in the dark. He's only got 600 men with him. Let me put together an army of 12,000 and let's raid him tonight. And I'm going to go after the king. I'm going to kill him. And the kingdom will be yours. And we'll bring back those prisoners back to Jerusalem as prisoners of war. Servants, they'll be to you. You know, that was good advice from a military perspective. David did not have an opportunity to gather, you know, his troops. He didn't have the opportunity to get in a stronghold, you know, as far as graphically. He's really a sitting duck at this point. It's pitch black. They had the upper hand, guys. So everything Ahithophel said actually made good sense. However, and I do believe the sovereignty of God is involved at this point, Absalom hears it and says, that is a good idea. Absalom doesn't even have to leave the palace. Ahithophel is going to lead the charge. Absalom says, I like it. The elders of Israel say, we like it. Let's do this. But all of a sudden, Absalom says, "But hey, well, I just want to get a second opinion. Real quickly, before we just go ahead with this, I just want to get a second opinion." And that's where God, I believe, opens up this amazing door for Hushai. No doubt a door he was praying for, guys. No doubt a door he was just waiting for. If he interjected, barked in, said, wait a minute, he might have been exposed, but he just waited for the door. I think there's something to that, guys. I really do believe in praying a door open versus kicking a door open. I've kicked a lot of doors open in my life. D.A., in the name of Jesus. I've done that a lot, right? I really have. I'm talking figuratively speaking. And just go in someplace, you know, not prepared, have no idea, and just in my own strength, and it's an absolute embarrassing flop. You ever been there? You wouldn't admit it, right? But I'll tell you, when you just hear the Lord speak, and He says, this is what I want you to do, and then you go into a season of prayer where you say, all right, Lord, now you open up the door. I'm not going to kick a door open. You open up the door. You make it clear. And He does. It is absolutely night and day, isn't it? It really is. We can, like I said in my prayer, we can huff and puff and blow doors down. Better let the Spirit of God do it. Because then no one can shut that door. I see that here. So, in comes Hushai. Here it goes, guys. In verse 5, then said Absalom, call now Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear likewise what he saith. And when Hushai was come to Absalom, Absalom spake unto him, saying, Ahithophel has spoken after this manner. Shall we do after his saying? If not, speak thou. So he lays it out. This is Ahithophel's plan, Hushai. He thinks we should go tonight. He thinks we should put 12,000 men together and kill my father tonight. I kind of like that idea. But you're an advisor. I want to give you your shot. What do you think? If you don't like it, you better speak up now because I'm about to give the command. And here it is, guys. I wonder if there was one of those internal, very quick prayers right here by Hushai. A lot like you see with the, help me out here. Who's the guy who goes back and rebuilds the wall? Nehemiah. You guys remember that? When the king gives Nehemiah his opportunity and he says, God help me. You ever pray those prayers? You can't pray out loud because once again, you'll be exposed. If Hushai says, oh God help me. Right. What was that all about? But you guys know those quick, desperate, very legitimate prayers when you know it is time to shine and you just say, Lord, you've got to give me wisdom right now. But you keep that smile on your face. I've been there, man. Counsel situation, marriage is completely deteriorated, scrambled egg, give it to the pastor. Would you fix this, please? And you're going, you want to stay pastoral always. You want to keep your game face on. Everybody relax. I know what to do. Oh my God, help me, right? But it all has to be internal, doesn't it? I wonder, guys, I really do. I wonder if Hushai at this point says, Lord Jesus, move. Okay, ready? And I love the way he handles this. Verse 8. Hushai said unto Absalom, verse 7, the counsel that Ahithophel hath given is not good at this time. Very strategic. Yeah, I like it too. Timing's all wrong. I don't think his timing is right. Okay. If he just says, horrible idea, he's an idiot. I don't know that that would have gone over the same way. But he says, listen, I don't think his counsel is good at this time. I like his ideas, right? What a diplomat. I really like his approach. The ultimate goal, I'm with him. We need to do something about David if you're going to be king. I don't think it's time for that yet. And here's why. And he just goes into thick flattery mode. And Absalom, being subject to the praise of man, selfish, ambitious, he goes all for this, guys. Ready? Here's why this is poor advice and poor timing. For said Hushai, thou knowest thy father and his men, that they be mighty men. They're no slouches, okay? We're talking about David and his mighty men, okay? They got some exploits. They have some past history. I think he's underestimating them, number one. That's the first thing he says. You know that got young Absalom going, all right. Okay, I'm listening. And he goes on to say, and they be chafed in their minds, as a bear robbed of her whelps in the field. And thy father is a man of war, and he will not lodge with the people. Interesting. First of all, you understand, David and his men right now are absolutely outraged. Now, they weren't. They were heartbroken. But Hushai is saying, I think Ahithophel is underestimating the unbelievable rage that's going on in that camp. These guys are not going to lay down, Absalom. They are as angry as a mother bear that's lost her bear cub. That's an angry bear, right? Some of you moms can relate to that. You do something to my babies, and this little meek lady gets really crazy, right? That's kind of the metaphor. That's mad. That's really mad. And not only that, your father is a man of war. He's been here before, Absalom. You think he's stupid enough to just hang out with his men? No, he knows he is the loot. He knows he's the bullseye of this one. He's isolated himself, hiding, no question. You're going to show up there and be embarrassed because there ain't no David around. I'm sure of it. That's quick on your feet, isn't it? That is a quick advisor. I think he's been here before. Verse 9, behold, he's hid now in some pit or some other place, and it will come to pass when some of them be overthrown at the first, that whosoever heareth it will say, there is slaughter among the people that follow Absalom. Then he also that is valiant, whose heart is as the heart of a lion, shall utterly melt. For all Israel knoweth that thy father is a mighty man, and they which be with him are valiant men. So here's the deal. If we don't do this right the first time, if there is any moment of doubt when we raid David and his men, if he has the upper hand at all the soldiers that are in this, their hearts are going to be melted. They're going to be absolutely petrified. They're going to have second thoughts, and then there's going to be no recovery. So what he's saying is, you have one shot at this. That's very manipulative. You have one shot at this, Absalom. One. I don't think you're prepared yet. I don't think you understand what's at stake. And then here's Hushai's advice. This is where Absalom, I think, was slayed by words. Ready? Therefore, in verse 11, I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered unto thee from Dan even to Beersheba, as the sand that is by the sea for multitude, and that thou go to battle to thine own person. So will we come upon him in some place where he shall be found, and we will light upon him as the dew falleth on the ground. And of him, and of all the men that are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he be gotten into a city, then shall all Israel bring ropes to that city, and we will draw it into the river until there not be one small stone found there. Now that is tough words. Here's the deal, guys. Now here's what needs to happen, Absalom. You need to go out and gather the entire nation unto yourself. from Dan, that is the northernmost point, to Beersheba, the southernmost point. Now right there, Absalom loves that. Yeah? The whole country under me. That's that flattery thing. I like that. You need to gather an army that is like the sand of the sea. He's probably dreamed about that as a boy, right? You think the whole country likes me that much? You think we could do that? You can see it, right? This young buck, he's just fanning his pride. Pride is a weakness, brothers. Pride is a weakness in men especially. Selfish ambition is an ugly thing. I'm telling you, Satan uses flattery to take down some of the most gifted men, like baby slaughter, truthfully. And that's exactly what's going on here. He's hearing this and he's going, now I really like this. I get to play. First of all of the armies follow me like the sand of the sea. That'll show Dad. That'll show Dad who's boss. And the militant, tough words, you know, this Absalom warrior is here in Hushai. Says, if he's in a city, if he's in a stronghold, there'll be so many of us, we'll take ropes and tie it around the city and drag the city into the water and drown them. In other words, we will outpower them, outnumber them, overwhelm them. How do you like that for a plan? Well, sounds a lot better than Ahithophel. I'll take 12,000. I'll get all the glory. You stay here, Absalom. He really likes this plan, and he goes with it. Verse 14, and Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai, the Archite, is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel, to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. Guys, the whole point of Hushai's counsel is to just buy David time. That's all he needs to do. Just give him time, be able to send word, let David know of the plan so that he is expecting it. And that's it. That's all David needs to come out on top. This is it right here. Now we just see it play out. Absalom doesn't have a prayer at this point. He's very inexperienced on the battlefield compared to his father and these mighty men. And Hushai saved the day. Verse 15, then said Hushai unto Zadok and Abathar the priests. Remember, this was part of the plan. Thus and thus did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel. And thus have I counseled. Now therefore send quickly and tell David, saying, lodge not this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up and all the people that are with him. So he keeps his word. And Jonathan and Ahimaaz stayed by En-Rogel, for they might not be seen to come into the city. And a wench, that is a female servant, that's not a PC word anymore, I realize, old English, a female servant went and told them, and they went and told King David. Nevertheless, look at this, the plot thickens. A lad saw them and told Absalom. But they went, both of them, away quickly, and came to a man's house in Behurim, which had a well in his court, whither they went down. And the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and spread ground corn thereon, and the thing was not known. So here's the deal, guys. As this whole discussion is being had, Hushai saying, listen, guys, this is what you got to go tell David. Here's the plan. This is when the army's going to strike. This is where. Get out of here. Get on the other side of Jordan. Get, you know, fortified. Get yourself in a stronghold so that you're ready for this. So he gives him a tip. Intelligence is sent out, but there's a little kid who overhears this and says, oh, I'm telling the king. And he does. So immediately, there's a dispatch to go get these two priests' sons, but they hide themselves in a well. And this little female servant lays a piece of fabric over the well, lays some corn out there like it's being harvested. How you doing? But there's these little messengers in there, hiding in that dry cistern. And these men, this bounty hunter crowd keeps flying by, and these young men get away with it. They get the message all the way to David. Let's continue on. It says in verse 20, and when Absalom's servants came to the woman to the house, they said, where is Ahimaaz and Jonathan? And the woman said unto them, they be gone over the brook of water. And when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. And it came to pass after they were departed, that they came up out of the well and went and told King David and said, David, arise, and passed quickly over the water, for thus hath Ahithophel counseled against you. Then David arose and all the people that were with him, and they passed over Jordan. By the morning light, there lacked not one of them that was not gone over Jordan. So guys, now there's a natural barrier between the forces of David and the forces of Absalom. It's a stronghold. And you're going to find out in just a few moments, it is a thick, dense forest that David is hiding in. Very easy to hide in, very easy to get away from, very difficult to ride through with horses, which Absalom has. So the pretty good chance for David and his men. Okay? Hang with me. It gets better. Then David arose and all the people that were with him, and they passed over Jordan. Verse 23, I just read that. And when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, this is sad, he saddled his donkey and arose and got him home to his house, to his city. He put his house in order, and he hanged himself. And he died. And he was buried in the sepulcher of his father. Again, I really do believe Ahithophel is a type of Judas, guys. Once he is exposed, once he realizes my counsel has not been heeded, he automatically knows David is going to come out of this. He automatically knows I'm going to be slaughtered for treason. So he beats David to the punch. He doesn't give David the satisfaction. I'm not saying there's any virtue in this. He could have repented. But he goes home, sets his affairs in order, and ends his own life. And I believe goes down in the history books as a betrayer to the king, a man who was hardened, wanted this relationship with the king for his own pleasure and advancement. And because he didn't get it, he bailed on the king and ends his own life in a bitter state. Ahithophel. Verse 24, then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over Jordan and all the men of Israel with him. And look at this. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the host instead of Joab, which Amasa was a man's son, whose name was Ithra, an Israelite. And he went into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister to Zeruah, Joab's mother. And so Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead. So he makes this Amasa his general to replace Joab, and he's starting to pursue David. Verse 27. And it came to pass when David was come to Mahanaim, that Shobi, the son of Nahash, of Rabbah, of the children of Ammon, and Machir, the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Barzilla, not to be confused with Godzilla, so I'm just comic relief, the Gileadite of Rogelim, they brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched pulse. You can't forget the pulse. And honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine. I'm hungry. For David and for the people that were with him to eat. For they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. Guys, understand what's going on here. These are Gentile men that have been exiled, defeated in the battlefield, had their heritages destroyed. And the unique thing of David among all the kings of Israel, he actually had a place for these people at his table. He housed these rejects of the world around him. He really did. And he fed them. He took care of them. Amazingly, study each one of them. Remind yourself of the history. We don't have time to go into it. But the point is, guys, what goes around comes around. That's the truth. As David reaches out in kindness to these men, he easily could have written them off. He shows them great kindness. When David is down and out, these are the men. Not the religious people, not the Jews, not David's own, but these people that have been extended and shown kindness, they are the ones that come and say, David, we got a care package for you, you and your men. And no doubt at that point, these guys were famished. MREs, right? They show up. Meals ready to eat. And cheese. That's a plus. Awesome. And honey and butter. I mean, they went above and beyond what was necessary. That's the point. Take that to the bank, guys. When you reach out to people that everybody else rejects, when you reach out and show kindness to people that maybe even for all intents and purposes seem like they deserve rejection, when you reach out to them and show them kindness, it comes around. It really does. You reap what you sow once again. It's a principle. Chapter 18, verse 1. We are doing good. We're only going to read down to the 18th verse. But there's some lessons here. It says in verse 1 that David numbered the people that were with him, and he set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. And it's another time, guys, if you remember, that David numbered the people, and he was rebuked by God. Because his concern was, how many people are under my thumb? I think Christian leaders get way too wrapped up in numbers, don't you guys? It's almost the reason why some people are in ministry, numbers. That crazy board that you see in so many churches, last week's attendance, you know, wishful thinking attendance, or, you know, there's categories. What in the world is that? It is the focus of so many ministries, the offering that's posted up there. What is that? Is that some kind of trophy? All I know is when Jesus spoke about giving, Jesus said, don't let your left hand know what your right hand, but we broadcast their offering. I realize maybe not as an individual, but I don't know. To me, there's some things that should just be between us and Jesus. And to me, there's some things that take away from Jesus being the focus. Numbers. Well, David numbers the people in this case, and it's very legitimate. And there's times when it is, guys. I'm not suggesting it's always a bad thing to know the people that we're serving, to know the amount of people. There's a heart issue we got to be careful of. But in this case, David numbers the people because he needs to know, okay, what am I working with here? I need to make some decisions. I need to make some wise decisions. What do I have that I'm working with here? And he numbers the people. And he divides them into brigades, right? Platoons. Sets captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. And here, guys, David sent forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab and a third part of the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and the third part under the hand of Ittai, the Gittite, three of his most trusted men, officers. And the king said unto the people, notice this, I will surely go forth with you myself also. That is huge, guys, right there. Notice that. The next battle, the next major conflict after Bathsheba, right? And at this point, David says, and listen, guys, I'm coming with you this time. That tells me something. That tells me that David has learned his lesson from the past, right? You want to look for that in a broken person. You want to look for, have they learned their lesson? Are there fruit that goes along with their repentance? Isn't that what John the Baptist said? Okay, you've allowed me to dunk you in the water. You've made a public profession of repentance. Now bring forth fruit worthy of repentance. I've said this so many times, guys, and I've had to learn this so many times. It isn't the words we listen to. Words are not the brokenness that we listen for. It is the actions of brokenness that prove if an individual is truly broken. Would you please remember that? That's huge. Everybody can turn the faucet on. Everybody can say, or anybody can say, humility terms and brokenness terms, bring forth fruit. I want to see, dry those eyes and show me something. That's what's going on here. David has actions that prove his brokenness. I'm coming with you this time too. I don't trust myself. I know what happened the last time I stayed home playing tiddlywinks. Right? I got to be in the middle of this, guys. I need to be in this conflict. That says a lot for his heart for the cause, doesn't it? He was willing to go to war with his own son because there was a greater cause that was driving David. Consider that. In light of what Jesus said about discipleship. You know, if you love your family more than Jesus, you're not worthy of me. Something to think about. At this point, David was determined to be involved. But, and I believe this is wise, the people answered, thou shalt not go forth. I don't think they were willing to take any kind of negotiations. Thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us. Neither if half of us die, will they care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, now it is better that thou secure us out of the city. Those are some faithful people. You know what, David? We will not let you go on this mission. They don't care about us. If we run away, if we retreat, they don't care about us. If we die, no big deal. But you, the king of Israel, your country needs you. They're going to come full circle. God's going to restore your throne. We know it. You are worth 10,000 of us. It is not wise that you go. And not only that, I think deep down they knew he didn't have what it takes anyway to do what was necessary in light of the fact that Absalom was his own son. In fact, you'll hear his plea with his men just before he says, okay, fine, go. Look at this. It says this. Verse 4, and the king said unto them, what seemeth you best, I will do. Once again, guys, that's brokenness. It's hard for a leader not to be involved with the work. I can say that from experience. It's really difficult for a leader to take a seat, a shepherd, not to be there with his people, not to be in the middle of everything. Not because it's about them necessarily. I mean, there certainly is that issue needs to be dealt with. But just that willingness to be there and to be hands-on. I'm like that personally. I can't stand just knowing about something going on over there. It drives me absolutely crazy. That's a weakness. It really is a weakness. And see, to me, I admire David that he could take a seat and say, you know what? This is what you guys think is best, and I'll submit to it. That's a servant leader right there. It wasn't a man who bullied. It wasn't a man who, no, I will go. I am your king. He didn't pull rank. He had enough humility to say, you know what? If this is best, then I'll do it because I want what's best. I think that's key. And the king stood by the gate side, no doubt, you know, like a horse wanting to get in the race, right? He's all the way at the gate. Notice he's not in the middle of the city, but he's right there as they leave, watching them leave. And all the people came out by hundreds and thousands, and the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Attai, saying, would you deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom? And all the people heard the king when he gave all the captains concerning charge of Absalom. There's no response from these three generals. Please notice that. But David says, as they're leaving, guys, would you just promise me one thing? For my sake, would you deal gently with Absalom? And they look and they continue to march. Everybody acknowledged, everybody heard this commandment. It's going to come up again. But guys, the truth is, gentleness would not do in this case. You know, that's legitimate, okay? I know a lot of times we think that way. What we need to do is just console and comfort and show grace. Man, there's a lot to say for that, consoling and comfort and grace. But you know what? Sometimes sin needs to be absolutely crushed and confronted aggressively. You understand that, right? And in this case, for sure, gentleness would not do. Gentleness doesn't work with Islam, despite what some foolish Americans even suggest. You know, we should just embrace them. You know, become business partners with radical. We should just give them what they're after. Let them build a mosque at ground zero. Guys, you don't give blood to a wolf and expect the wolf to go away. It doesn't work that way. But there are times when you need to meet something with brute force and aggression, the bully mentality. If you lay down for a bully, you will be bullied for the rest of your life. That's the truth. I bet some of you have experiences, right? On the playground. I do. You know, this is real quick. Real quick. You know the name of the bully that beat me up as a kid? This kid was absolutely non-human as far as the way he was built. This kid was like 6'8" in eighth grade. I'm not kidding you. You know what his name was? Boo. Isn't that sick? Oh. And every time I saw him around the corner, that was just what it was like. Boo. You know, I got shot by this guy, shot in the leg by this guy. You know, beat up. He just was this unbelievable bully. And it took an inch and a quarter inch diameter stick for me to be vindicated from that bully. What the heck are you going to do? I don't regret it. It felt good. I don't know if I would advise my own children to do the same thing, but I do know this, guys, that a bully will continue to bully until that bully is met with some force. And that's certainly the case here with Absalom. Daddy didn't have it in him, guys. I've seen this a lot when it comes to parents who love their kids. so much. But I've seen parents love their kids all the way to institutions, right? All the way to orange jammies. I've seen it. I really have. And I'll tell you, I didn't have a perfect upbringing. But one thing I thank God for all the time, I can't say every day, but frequently, is that I had a mom that looked at me at 15 years old and said with tears, "Hit the road, punk." I thank God for my mom that she did that. And I walked away in the rain, and I heard her crying behind me, and I'm mad and angry, and I'm going to do life. I don't need you. That whole big emotional scene. She knew something I didn't know. She knew, you think there's something out there that's going to bring you happiness, and you need to go get an education. You need to get a speedy education. And guys, the truth is, I have a past. We all do. But it was really short-lived, to be honest with you. From you know, my teenage years was it. I came to my senses before I hit 20 years old and realized mom was right, the Bible is true, Jesus Christ is where it's at, and there ain't nothing out there that I'm interested in. I don't know that I ever would have learned that if she padded all the blows and let me live my sinful lifestyle with three hots and a cot, truthfully. I know I wouldn't have learned that lesson. There's a time for that, guys. Yeah, David didn't have it. All right, we got to finish this up. I'll be really super quick. Ready? Let's just read this battle and end with two more thoughts. Verse 6. So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, and there was a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. For the battle was there scattered over the face of all the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. That is, there's collisions and casualties because of the denseness of the forest. Don't picture Wizard of Oz, right? The trees going, yeah, stabbing people, some weird supernatural thing. But just a less than ideal battlefield, and men moving fast on horseback are colliding into trees and getting decapitated, and an ugly scene. Verse 9. And Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak. And his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away. That is a humiliating scene. You guys get the picture? Okay, remember Absalom, this thick flowing hair. He cuts his hair once a year and he weighs it. It's 5 pounds of hair. This dude had this thick, just waving hair, and his picture, whoosh, whoosh, that hair just going, "I'm gonna get you," the last famous last words. As he comes through this thick, dense forest, his hair's on the up and catches in the branches. I'm sure that's the noise he made. I've prayed about that. And the mule keeps running. And he's hanging by his hair. Guys, that is sweet justice. That hair, which was his identity. Oh, can you picture it? Oh, just swinging it around. "Do you know who I am? I don't think you have to ask. Check the hair out." He was just this total playboy. But I've seen this, guys. I've seen the very thing that men make their identity, right? Their pride and their passion be the very thing that takes them down. I've seen it. I've seen it so many times. There's a lesson in this, guys. Here this man is, potentially the king of Israel. Such a leader, such a adored man, won the hearts of the people. He's hanging by his hair, screaming like a little girl. Right? That's the deal. And a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak." You gotta check this out, man. You ain't not gonna believe this. "Well, Joab said unto the man that told him, 'And behold, thou sawest him. Why didst thou now smite him there to the ground? You saw him and you didn't kill him. What if he gets away?' So he's rebuked. He says this, 'I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle.'" Okay, girdles have changed. Got this sweet girdle. "By the way, Joab, you could use a girdle." "And the man said unto Joab, 'Though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in my hand, yet would I not put forth mine hand against the king's son, For in our hearing the king charged thee and Abishai and Attai, saying, beware that none touch the young man Absalom. He says, I don't care how much you pay me, I'd never kill him because I know the wishes of my king was that his son be spared. This guy was as soft as David. I think this is a check in the positive box for Joab. Joab sees something beyond the love of a father. He sees a villain. He sees something that needs to be dealt with. I've heard certainly Bible commentators go both ways on this. But let's end this tonight with the Joab solution. Real quick, verse 13. Otherwise I should have wrought falsehood against my own life. For there is no matter hid from the king, and thou thyself wouldest have set thyself against me. Then said Joab, I may not tarry thus with thee. I ain't waiting around any longer with you. And he took three darts, that is three spears, in his hand, and he thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive and in the midst of the oak. So, one, two, three spears. He's making sure that there's no coming out of this. And then on top of that, it says 10 young men that bear Joab's armor compassed about and smote Absalom and Sloan. So they get the final blows. Absalom's gone. He's dead. Judged by God ultimately. And his very strength was his greatest weakness. And that is a typical story, guys. We got to be careful of that pride thing. We got to be real careful about ambition and the love for human praise, because it is one of the most destructive things, especially within God's people. That'll put you on the shelf quicker than anything. The desire for praise. Last thing. And Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing after Israel. And Joab held back the people. He brings this civil war to an end. Enough, guys. It's over. Wise. And they took Absalom, and they cast him into a great pit in the wood, and laid a very great heap of stones upon him. And all Israel fled, every one to his tent. Now Absalom, in his lifetime, had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dale. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's place. That's where we'll end tonight.